welcome back to
Champs Are Chumps.
I am your host, the Sala Monster. Now, before we continue, I'd like to apologize for what happened before the break. Apparently, Jack Swagger was not aware that the person with the fewest number of points at the end of the lightning round would actually be struck by lightning. On the plus side, he appears to no longer have a lisp when he speaks. For those of you just joining us, I'm sure you'll be quite familiar with our lone remaining contestant, making his record 6th appearance on the show. All the way from Preston, England, he is the reigning WWE Intercontinental Champion, Bad News Barrett.
I resent the fact that I'm even on this bloody ridiculous show.
Mr. Barrett is currently in last place with negative 3,000 points.
What? How could I be last place if I'm the only contestant left?
Well, logic isn't exactly our forte here on Champs Are Chumps, Mr. Barrett. But I'll tell you what, we're going to give you a chance to redeem yourself by answering a series of final questions. Hands on the buzzer, here we go. As the United States champion, this man, who has yet to win a match on pay-per-view since Payback in June of last year, defended his title on TV just 15 times in 351 days as champion. Of those 15 title defenses, he won exactly 4 of them clean by pinfall or submission.
That's easy. Who is Dean Ambrose?
Oh, I'm so sorry. That is incorrect. The correct response is, who is Dean Ambrose?
What? That's what I said.
No, you said Dean Ambrose. I'm sorry, we cannot accept that answer because...
Champs are chumps!
But...
Don't worry, though, because we're increasing the point value on this last question to 5,000 points. You get this one right, you win the game. This man is now 1-7 in non-title matches on TV since winning the Intercontinental title.
That would be me.
Correct! You win the game!
Finally, some respect for the champion.
Wait just a second. I have our producer, Kevin Dunn, in my ear.
You little Bucky Beaver dipshit.
And I'm afraid I've got some bad news. Unfortunately, because you did not answer in the form of a question, we cannot accept your answer.
What the bloody hell?
And as such, that means that you have lost this game. But fear not, because you're not leaving empty-handed. Oh no, we're giving you a championship match at WrestleMania. That's right. You'll be defending your title in a ladder match against a bunch of other guys who we have absolutely no idea how to use. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Join us next time for a special abbreviated 30-second edition of the program with Divas Champion Nikki Bella, right here on...
Champs Are Chumps!
It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I was channeling every cheesy 1970s game show host I ever saw with that intro there. This is episode 371. Of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for the first day of March, 2015. I am the Sala Monster. For those of you attending WrestleMania in the Bay Area this year, Mania Crawl is the official bar crawl for fans of the Sala Monster Sounds Off. It's a nonprofit bar crawl. It's in the downtown San Jose area. It takes place hours before the big show. It's a great way to find other wrestling fans like yourself, share a beer with them, complain about Roman Reigns being in the main event of WrestleMania. Over 300 people already signed up. It's the second year in a row they're doing this. Go to maniacrawl.com for more information. In the next few weeks, I'll have info on another cool deal exclusive to Sound Off fans who are headed to Mania this year in California. See, you guys benefit just by listening to the podcast. You don't even have to do anything. Just listen, and you will reap the rewards. I want to say thank you to Mish and Joey Numbers for having me back on Wrestling Soup last week. It's a lot of fun. You guys seem to enjoy it. You can find the show. It's on their feed. You can go on WrestlingSoup.com. It's also on iTunes and Stitcher. We were on for 2 hours, maybe over 2 hours, probably closer to 2.5 hours. We had a great time, and hopefully we'll do it again soon. So my thanks to them. Got to promote our Audible link. A lot of you have been taking advantage of the offer. We had a lot of signups in February. Now we start the slate over again. It's now March. It's a brand new month. So you go to audibletrial.com. /Solomonster. You can sign up. You get to sample the Audible service free for 30 days. You're under no obligation to continue beyond that if you don't want to. And no matter what, you sign up, you get one free audiobook. That's our gift to you. One free audiobook. It belongs to you, whether you stick with it or not. So go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. From there, you got to go through the sign-up process. And at that point, you can cash in on your free book. And it's pretty much any book you want. It could be wrestling. It could be non-wrestling. I've been pushing the new Shawn Michaels book. It's rated pretty highly on there. You can buy it if you want to. It's about $17, $18. I don't know why you would. You can get it for free. So get the new Shawn Michaels book using our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. If you like what you hear every single week, also please consider making a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here. $30 or more, beyond the nickname and the shout-out, you get a quick plug for your own podcast, if you have one. It has to be yours. Just include that information when you make the donation. So let's just get into the shout-outs right here and now. Thank you to Adam Ban the Brogue Topless. He is no fan of Sheamus, as you can tell by his nickname. The Marietta Mauler, Alexandru Mata. Guilty as charged, Mark Court. The Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra. Hytham, the Equalizer, Al Nawasser. Tori, All I Do Is Win, Johansson. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Devastation, David Uragus. Demolition Man, Donovan McIntosh. True Grit, Tim Goggin. Barbaric, Benson Anwuri. Blunt Force, Brian Colbert. Medium Maven, Jason Corrigan. Nathan Monday Night Raleigh. Love Machine, Lucy Green. Sensational Salem Almanhali. And the Aerial Assassin, Jordan Dillard. Thank you very much for your donations this week. Again, you can make one on thesolomonster.com. And you can check out our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. If you got your tax refund this year, I didn't. That's for damn sure. I got nailed this year. But if you did, if you got a refund from the government, why not consider spending part of it on a Sound Off shirt? They ship all over the world. You can pay via PayPal, via credit card. And when you get yours, be sure to tweet me your photos of you wearing the shirt, and I'll be happy to retweet and share them with the rest of the world. So prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. This is such a packed show. We have so much ground to cover here, and I've been so damn busy this week. There will be no Impact review, simply because I have not had a chance to watch Impact. So it's kind of hard to review a show that you haven't watched. I hope to get to that later tonight. One reason I did not get to see Impact is because I was at Madison Square Garden on Friday night for Hulk Hogan Appreciation Night. A fun show with a great tribute ceremony. Not the best WWE show ever, according to one story on the Business Insider website. I mean, Jesus. Talk about a clickbait headline. Any show with an R-Truth vs. Fandango match and Kane in the main event can never be called the best show of all time. That automatically disqualifies it from that title. I posted a ton of photos and videos on my Twitter if you want to go back and see it, at Solomonster. I posted a video on Instagram. I know I kind of forget about our Instagram page a lot, but you can find us. We are on Instagram. The exterior of Madison Square Garden was lit up red and yellow, which was pretty cool. They also had red and yellow ring ropes for the event. No real standout matches, so I'll go with the opener as the best match of the night. It was a triple threat for the Intercontinental title. Ambrose, Barrett, Ziggler. Barrett won. I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there going, hey, you got to win. So I guess the gimmick is that he wins off camera at the house shows, just not on TV. Got it. If there's a word in the wrestling dictionary for less than over, it would have a picture of the New Day next to it. People did not care at all about these three guys. It was quite the contrast to how people were reacting to Kofi Kingston 6 years ago in the Garden when he did the boom drop on Randy Orton. And why should they? You know, why should people care? It's just like the Divas match later on in the show. They had Paige against Nikki Bella. They gave it almost 6.5 minutes. I timed it with the stopwatch. But most of the time, the fans were busy chanting, "Let's go Cena, Cena sucks." When you book these people to mean nothing on television every week, or you give them no time on television, which makes one think that these people are not important, then that's what the fans are conditioned to think. They're conditioned to look at their matches and think, eh, it's time to take a piss, time to go buy a hot dog, let's chant random things, let's chant about Cena, even though he has nothing to do with the match, let's cheer for JBL, let's cheer for Jerry Lawler. I felt bad for them. I felt bad for the women, because they didn't deserve that. They aired a video for Connor the Crusher, which nearly turned me into a blubbering mess. I bought a Connor's Cure bracelet, $5. All the money they make off them goes towards pediatric brain cancer research. They sell them at all the live events, so the next time you go to a WWE show, pick one up. It's for a good cause. Chris Jericho was there for a highlight reel, which never happened. Instead, he cut a promo, turned into a match against Luke Harper, which Jericho won. During the promo, Jericho, he started to do his old routine on Stephanie, where he would call her a dirty, disgusting, bottom-feeding trash bag. He stopped short of calling her a hoe, and then he joked, he said, well, we're PG now, it's not my fault. And people booed that very loudly. They were not happy about that. I believe this might have been the last date on Jericho's new contract. He only signed on to do house shows. I think he may be going back on tour with Fozzy, so he's going to go away for a while again. I was surprised to see Randy Orton beat Bray Wyatt clean in the middle with an RKO, given how, I mean, look at how they booked Bray now for months. I know it's a house show, so I guess it really doesn't matter, but still, it, like, in the Garden, that's their home base. They care about what happens in Madison Square Garden more than probably most other buildings. And I cannot remember the last time I saw Bray Wyatt lose a match, like on TV. I mean, I can't remember it now that I think about it. They've been keeping him strong for The Undertaker. They've known they were probably going to do this match for months. I can't remember the last time he won or the last time he lost clean on TV. Maybe somebody can chime in and help me out here. It's been a long time. Then we had the Hulk Hogan Appreciation Ceremony. Jimmy Hart was out first. Hogan doesn't go anywhere without Jimmy Hart, so we knew he'd be there. Then they introduced the NWO, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. Scott Hall's first time back at MSG since the curtain call incident in 1996. He took a survey. People were just eating this up. The NWO was probably, if not the most over act on the entire show, it was in the top two or three. A lot of people in my section there to see the NWO wearing NWO shirts. NWO merch was selling out, from what I was told, at a lot of the merchandise stands. Nash then introduced Hulk Hogan to a big reaction, as you would expect. I tell you what, I will never, ever get tired of hearing Real American. I'm more of a mark for Real American than I am for Hogan. And to hear it again at MSG was pretty cool. I would say the last time I heard that music played in the Garden probably would have been 1991 or 1992. That's how far back it goes. Ric Flair came out as a surprise. We got Hogan and Flair in the ring together. And we got a Flair promo. He was kissing Hogan's ass, like you wouldn't believe. When he called Hogan the most charismatic guy he had ever shared the ring with, there were noticeable Randy Savage chants. Then Flair brought up his son, Reed, and how Hogan was there for him, you know, when all that stuff went down, and Flair started crying. I wonder if they called Jim Ross on the phone to fire him a second time, even though he doesn't work for them anymore. You know, because that was totally his fault the last time it happened as well. Triple H came out, not to his usual King of Kings theme. He came out to his other one. It was him along with a couple of stooges from MSG. They were there to present Hogan with a giant photo, a mural that was taken of him from the first WrestleMania. They also aired a couple of Hogan tribute videos. And then this was actually the really cool moment, I would say, of the entire thing. They surprised Hogan by unveiling a banner in tribute to Hogan, and I guess all of his contributions to the Garden over the years. They slowly lifted the banner up into the rafters. It now sits next to a bunch of New York Knicks championship banners, obviously none in recent years. But once upon a time, believe it or not, the Knicks did win some titles. I mean, no, really, stop laughing. They did. The banner was lifted right in front of us. We were way up there. We were way up there. And so all of a sudden Triple H points up to our section. For a moment there, I thought maybe Sting was behind us up there in the rafters. That's when I realized they were lifting up the banner. Got some good video of that. The whole thing was really cool. Absolutely something that should have been taped to air on the network. They did have cameras filming the entire thing. It could be part of a DVD down the line maybe, but they really need to air this as a network special later this month or something. Maybe they will. I mean, the idea of airing the occasional house show itself, the actual house show on the network, or even something special like this, not the entire show, but just a ceremony. Yeah, that's something I talked about a long time ago on this podcast. This is not a new idea. This is not a new concept. So hopefully they will air this, because it's the sort of thing they really need to be doing. Main event was changed to a tag team match. It was Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan against Seth Rollins and Kane. Yes, I got to see Kane and Daniel Bryan once again in the main event. Unbelievable. Originally, it was supposed to be Roman Reigns against Bray Wyatt. So what that tells me is they didn't trust the crowd reaction that Roman Reigns would get, so they changed it. Especially against Wyatt, because Wyatt gets a fair number of cheers, especially for the entrance. So Reigns came out, he got a mixed reaction the way that John Cena did. Bryan didn't get any boos the way that Roman Reigns did, but truth be told, Bryan's reaction was not as loud as you would expect. I was expecting more. They seem to have succeeded in diminishing this guy's reaction, given the way he's been booked on TV, so way to go, guys. Way to go. Roman Reigns won with a spear on Seth Rollins, and that was that. Bryan rushed to the back, and they left Reigns out there all by himself to smack hands with the fans at ringside. So overall, again, it was a fun show. The Hogan ceremony put it over the top. Just having all those guys there, the banner thing. I mean, whatever you may think of Hogan, that was a really cool thing to be a part of. And hopefully you guys at some point soon will get a chance to see it. WWE Fastlane. See, I got the name right. I caught myself there. I was going to say Fastlane, and then I kind of smacked myself, and I said, don't do that. It's WWE Fastlane. Was last weekend on pay-per-view. Do we even say pay-per-view anymore? On pay-per-view, on the network, right? I mean, I guess it's still technically on pay-per-view. I don't know how many of you guys are actually buying it on pay-per-view. Probably not many. So we had Fastlane last weekend. Decent show. Terrible crowd. Although, hard to blame them, I guess. Just didn't feel like anything more than a glorified 3-hour episode of Raw without the ad breaks. You know, even with Sting there. Sting doesn't make very many appearances. He's only been on Raw once. So having him there, you would think, would make it feel more special. When it was over, it didn't really feel that much more special at all. It just felt like a special edition of Raw. That's really all it was. But you know what? You're getting the show for free. The show was free in the month of February, so what do you expect? Just some quick thoughts here running through the show. I mean, it opened with the 6-man tag. The Babyfaces did not get the win, in fact. And it was a fun match. I thought that was marred by a dumb finish. Had Kane pinning Dolph Ziggler, of all people in this match. You have Eric Rowan in the match, and you pin Dolph Ziggler, the man you're likely putting in your Intercontinental title ladder match at WrestleMania, and not Eric Rowan. I mean, I guess he could end up in there, but I don't expect him to. And yet you pin Dolph Ziggler. It just doesn't make sense to me. Goldust and Stardust, bad match, botched finish. Goldust won with a crucifix pin that seemed to confuse the referee more than anything else. And so it was a 3 count, but it looked horrible. This did not make me want to see these two in a rematch of WrestleMania. They should have just saved it for that show, taken the next 6 weeks, 7 weeks to really build this thing up. But they had to throw the match out there right away, and they had a bad match. And now I think people are less interested as this feud continues on and they build to a rematch. I mean, after this, who would want to see the rematch? Goldust did cut a great promo backstage before the match. He was talking to Dusty. Dusty was there. Some guys just get better with age, and I think Goldust is one of those guys. His promos, his in-ring work, his physique, all better than ever. Think about it. Think how long he's been doing this for. Over 20 years. All the different characters, all the different incarnations, all the different promotions he's worked for. All three of those things, his promos, his work, and his physique have never been better. And the guy is in his mid-40s, and he's probably about to retire, and I'm almost sad. Because I feel like, unlike other guys who don't know when to let go, I feel like Goldust can probably get another 5 years out of this if he wants to. The Usos against Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, tag team titles, really good match. Kidd and Cesaro win. The right team won, so I have no complaints about that. We had the Sting Triple H face-off. No Big Show and Kane getting killed with the bat like I had pitched, but we did finally get to see the baseball bat, and I also... As I also predicted, he threatened Triple H with the bat as a way to get his WrestleMania match. He did it all without saying a word, so the match is now official. We had Nikki Bella pinning Paige with a fistful of tights for the Divas title. Bad, bad match. Paige's top nearly popped off at the end. I'm pretty sure I saw Nikki's lady parts no less than 3 times, which is the one thing that made this match enjoyable. They just couldn't seem to get on the same page here. You know, no pun intended. Dean Ambrose, Bad News Barrett for the Intercontinental title. Inexcusably bad finish in this match. Barrett won by DQ. Ambrose got disqualified. He wouldn't stop kicking him in the corner. And this was so not like the finish of the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens match at TakeOver, so don't even try to throw that in my face. Okay, this was just bad. Bad, bad, bad. Bray Wyatt outright challenged The Undertaker, finally, to a match at WrestleMania. They did the whole elaborate Undertaker entrance with the druids and the music, the casket, Wyatt popped out of the casket. The so-called dirt sheets, I guess, were right again, 2 years in a row. They correctly leaked Bray Wyatt's opponent at WrestleMania months before the show. You know, people scoffed last year. They scoffed again this year. Where are those people now? Where are all the dirt sheet naysayers now? Nowhere to be found. They're hiding under a rock. John Cena and Rusev, United States Championship match. Rusev wins by submission. Let me repeat that. Rusev wins via submission. That is a finish I did not see going into this match. Lana distracted the referee. That gave Rusev a chance to kick Cena in the balls, lay him out with a kick to the head. He locked Cena in the accolade. Cena was out, was not responding, or reasonably defending himself, and so the referee called for the bell. And yet still, there were people complaining that it was not a clean finish. Oh, he won, but he looked bad. Cena made him look weak. He's a heel. He is a heel. He is the evil Russian sympathizer. He is a heel. He is a bad guy. What the hell do you expect? I said going in, my prediction for this, the way I would have done it, was to give Rusev the cheap win, which is exactly what they did. They gave him a cheap win. He was never going to get to beat Cena clean, especially if there's going to be a rematch at WrestleMania. Cena lost via submission. Enjoy it, because it's the only time you're ever going to hear the ring announcer utter those words ever again. I did get a chuckle out of JBL talking about how John Cena talks to himself as a way to cover for his blatant spot calling during the match. I've never seen anything like it. It is a sight to behold watching a John Cena match. I've never seen a veteran, a top guy, so loudly and obviously call out spots during his matches. I mean, 13 years this guy's been doing this for. It's so bad that I can call his moves half the match I could call before he even does it. It's completely ridiculous. Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan for the right to meet Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Stiff match between the two of them. Roman goes over strong with the spear. Easily the best singles match that Roman Reigns has ever had in his entire career. No surprise there. I said going in, Bryan would carry him to the best singles match he's ever had. That's exactly what he did. I never did think they were changing their plans for WrestleMania. I predicted Roman to win clean, and he did. Part of it was hope. I wasn't 100% convinced they weren't going to throw Sheamus out there to screw Bryan, but my prediction was Sheamus would interfere, in, if anything, in the Cena match, and I was actually happy that didn't happen either. But my call going in was Roman wins, and he wins clean, and that's what they did. They're going with the inferior match for the WrestleMania main event, but that's their choice. When it was over, Bryan told him he better kick Brock's ass at WrestleMania, and he walked off. So this was a really good match, really good way to end the show, but overall I just thought it was decent. It was decent at best. I have to talk about one of my favorite people here right now, because this is a story, and I do find it somewhat humorous, although maybe not for the people who were affected. Vince Russo, through his loyal paying subscribers to his website, a swerve this weekend. On Saturday, Russo announced that he is no longer associated with his own website, pyroandballyhoo.com, without any explanation given to anybody. A lot of those people who had just been billed that morning for the next month of their payment cycle, not happy about this. These are the people who signed up to be part of Russo's brand. The brand, he calls them. I guess we can add that to the growing list of brands that he helped kill. He posted something on the website the night before talking about taking a hiatus. Then he took it down. And by the next morning, this is what he posted on his official Facebook page. To all visitors of pyroandballyhoo.com, as of today, I am no longer associated with the website or brand, Pyro and Ballyhoo, in any way, shape, or form. I will not be posting anything, blogs, videos, podcasts, from this point going forward. I am in no way any longer associated with the website. Please know that if you renew your monthly membership, you will not be getting any content from Vince Russo from this day going forward. I also ask that you not buy any Vince Russo merchandise. Who the hell would do that anyway? As I no longer have access to the orders, I will keep you all updated on my future endeavors here on my Facebook page. As always, I have been and still am very thankful for all of your support. I'm sure he is. Let me tell you something. If you were dumb enough to give this man your money, you get exactly what you deserve. He posted another update later on saying that he's going to try to address the issue with PayPal on behalf of his paying customers first thing Monday morning. What an embarrassment this guy is. And how does one lose access to their own website? How does that happen? I thought that was awfully strange. So I plugged pyroandballyhood.com into a Whois database search. And it seems as though Vince Russo is not even the owner of his own website. It's registered to somebody called Dirty Diva, who lives in Oklahoma. And interestingly, the domain is set to expire on March 25th, so it may be up for grabs. Webmaster Mike should grab it and have the URL redirect to seScoops.com. He might actually pick up a whole 28 new visitors. Russo is a clown. He's always been a clown. He's doink, but without the talent. And to the people saying that this means he's accepted a job working for Lucha Underground, oh, this must mean he's going to Lucha Underground. He's not. I refuse to believe that the fine folks at Lucha Underground are that blind, deaf, and dumb to not recognize the fact that this guy is a clown.
See, I don't ask my audience what they want. I tell them what they want. I tell them what they want, and then they like it.
Speaking of clowns, I thought that was an appropriate soundbite to use here in this Raw review. Raw was live from Nashville, Tennessee this past Monday night. The DistractionRollup.com counter did not move. No roll-ups this week, so that's a plus. Brock Lesnar. We have to talk about Brock Lesnar first. Brock Lesnar was not on Raw. He was scheduled. He was advertised, actually, for Raw up until 20 minutes before the show. He was backstage, and then he walked out before the show was even over. He had some sort of contract dispute with Vince McMahon, said to be strictly a business issue that is related to negotiations for a new deal. Something made Brock mad. And he left. And then, to make things even more interesting, who should show up at UFC 184 last night sitting cage-side with Dana White? Brock Lesnar. Dressed in a three-piece suit, no less, looking like he was there to sell Dana a used car. One of my predictions for 2015 was Brock returning to UFC. Remember when I did that whole prediction show? And a lot of people said that as well. Some people thought maybe he'd go to Bellator. Some people thought he would stay in WWE. My prediction was that he would go back to UFC. I've done pretty well with my predictions so far this year. This one's looking pretty good right about now, too. You know, if it's a negotiating tactic, we'll see if Vince blinks and gives him what he wants. I'm not sure Brock really wants to fight again so much as he just wants the best deal. You know, and if Vince McMahon thinks he's worth it, and with pay-per-view going away, he may not be. They'll either make the deal or they won't. There was a rumor that spread on Reddit during the week. I talked about this with the Wrestling Soup guys, that Brock was walking out of the arena on Monday because Roman Reigns failed a drug test. And Brock was angry that WWE was going to hide it and not punish him for it. The whole report was horse shit. Why would Brock Lesnar even give a shit? Why would he care if he found out Roman Reigns failed a drug test? How would he even know? But people ran with it. WWE was forced to put out a statement denying it. It's not true. Roman Reigns did not fail a drug test. What makes things really interesting is that, you know, this guy is the WWE champion going into their biggest show of the year with his contract about to expire, and he's pissed off and he's showing up at a UFC pay-per-view. That's bad news for WWE. Brock is a master negotiator, though. I will give him a lot of credit. I mean, he's in a very enviable position right now where he's got this contract coming to an end at the same time that UFC clearly would love to have him back. Bellator is the number two MMA brand. They're trying to get things going. They have a Kimbo Slice, Ken Shamrock fight for June now that they just signed. You don't think they would love to have Brock Lesnar? And they've got the backing. I mean, Bellator's got the money probably to sign Brock if they really wanted him. So he's got all of these different entities going after him. Who knows how many other MMA organizations might want him. He's going to go where he can get the best deal. I'm going to stick with my prediction and say UFC. I'd love to see him come back to WWE. I do not want to see Brock Lesnar leave and Paul Heyman possibly leave. I think that would be bad for WWE, but he's going to go where the money is, as I think we all would. It was Randy Orton's first time back on Raw in 4 months. He wanted to kill Seth Rollins. He went after him. Orton actually came back at the Fastlane pay-per-view. WWE Fastlane, sorry. He came back on the pay-per-view and tried to get Rollins. Rollins bailed. He ran out of the building. So, makes sense, right? The last time we saw Randy Orton, he was curb-stomped. He was bloodied. It was an attack that was orchestrated by Triple H and Stephanie. Triple H reluctantly, Stephanie not so much. So he was laid out, gone for months. It makes sense that he would come back looking for blood, looking for revenge. So here he is on Raw. The Authority comes out. Stephanie tries to convince Orton to come back into the fold. Orton then accepted their proposal for a business conference backstage. And Orton ended up making peace with Seth Rollins, rejoining the Authority. He tagged with Rollins in the main event. Didn't lay him out with an RKO. Orton wrestled the main event like a heel. And I know exactly where they're going with this. He is wrestling Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. There's no doubt about it. But this whole thing was just way too goofy for my tastes. The only way this makes sense, the only way, is if Orton really wants to get revenge on Seth Rollins, instead of just attacking him, he really wants to get this guy back good for what he did. He really wants to get back at him for bloodying him up all those months ago. March 9th is Brock Lesnar's next scheduled appearance on Monday Night Raw. Although, given recent events, who the hell knows. But he is scheduled to be there on March 9th. The only payoff to this Orton and Rollins stuff, the way that they're doing it, this goofy, contrived way that they're doing this, is that Rollins attempts a cash-in on Brock on that episode of Raw. Now, maybe there's another episode of Raw a week or two later that Brock's going to be on. Maybe it doesn't have to be March 9th. I'm using March 9th as an example. He tries to cash in on Brock on that show. And a lot of people would not be expecting it, right? I think at this point he's waited so long, most people just assume that Rollins is going to try to cash in, whether he does so successfully or not. Who knows? But he will attempt a cash in at WrestleMania. That's what most people are probably expecting. So it would catch people off guard, probably would catch Brock off guard. This would be contingent on Brock being laid out. Maybe him and Reigns are in the ring and Brock goes after him and, you know, Reigns lays him out with a spear and then leaves. I don't know. They'd have to set up a situation where Rollins could get Brock down. Brock is in a vulnerable position. But he tries to cash in Money in the Bank on Brock so that he could be the defending champion heading into WrestleMania. Because wouldn't that be a more prestigious position for Rollins to be in if he was already the champion going into WrestleMania? Right? So it would make sense that he would want to give it a shot. And Brock's never around. That's why Rollins can't cash in. It's hard to cash in on the champion when he's never there. So he's got Brock in a position where it looks like he's going to cash in and win this title. And then Orton ruins it for him, costs him the title shot. He's been carrying this thing around for almost a year. It goes right down the toilet. He either lays him out with an RKO for the DQ, or Orton does something that allows Brock maybe to pin Rollins. Ruining Seth's cash-in is the only way this makes any sense. Having Orton, you know, pretend to forgive him and going through all these phony motions, you know, and then when he lowers his guard, he lowers the boom. Now, I suspect he'll do that anyway, but wouldn't it be more impactful if he did it where it cost him his Money in the Bank? That, to me, is the only way that this, in the end, would make sense. And I would look at it and go, okay, now that made sense. Dolph Ziggler against Wade Barrett, non-title match with R-Truth on commentary. He was there because he beat Barrett on SmackDown the week before in a non-title match. I'm pretty sure I beat Barrett at some point as well. You probably did too. By now, I think half the roster has beaten Barrett in non-title matches. One guess, who won this match? Champs or chumps? How many times must I say it? The angle here appears to be that the champion is on a losing streak. They're doing a losing streak angle with the champion. After the match, Dean Ambrose walked out holding the Intercontinental title that he stole from Barrett the night before. He got in the ring, bumped shoulders with Ziggler, teasing a little dissension there. Then he flaunted the title right in Barrett's face, and then he left. Not even so much as an attempt by Barrett to take back the title. It's his title! What a terrible champion! He loses every match he's in, and then when the guy who stole the belt confronts him, he lets him walk away. So, based on what we saw here, it appeared they were going to set up a four-way at WrestleMania for the title with Ambrose, Barrett, Ziggler, and Truth. But then on SmackDown, they had Daniel Bryan beat Wade Barrett, and it was strongly teased that Bryan might be added to the mix. Then, they announced that Barrett will defend his title in a ladder match at WrestleMania against multiple challengers. Who and how many will be revealed at a later date? They didn't tell us yet. They're basically bringing the Money in the Bank ladder match back to WrestleMania, only with a title above the ring instead of a briefcase, which means that right now, as of this moment, it looks like Daniel Bryan will be fighting for the Intercontinental title against six or seven other guys, one of which I would expect to be Sheamus. Dave Meltzer had a must-read write-up on Bryan and the Bryan and Reigns stuff in the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter. It's really more depressing than anything else, but it's a great write-up. But he made a great comment that's so true. I wanted to mention this. And that is that coming out of WWE Fastlane, Bryan now is Chris Benoit after Randy Orton beat him at SummerSlam in 2004. And he's so right. It's the exact same scenario. They gave Benoit his big moment at WrestleMania that year. He won the title, but he was never going to be the guy. The plan was for Benoit to lose the title to the young up-and-comer who looked pretty and who would carry the company for years to come in Randy Orton. So likewise, the plan had been for Bryan to hold the title until SummerSlam, have Brock Lesnar destroy him the way that he destroyed John Cena. That would have been Bryan had he not gotten hurt. And then eventually transition the title to the young up-and-comer who looked pretty and would carry the company for years to come in Roman Reigns. And actually, the similarities between Benoit and Bryan, frankly, are fucking eerie. Really eerie. Benoit won the title with a crossface in the WrestleMania main event. Daniel Bryan won the title with a crossface in the WrestleMania main event. Benoit did the diving headbutt. Bryan does the diving headbutt. Benoit had to have neck surgery. Bryan had to have neck surgery. Someone pointed out to me that at WrestleMania, the year after Benoit won the title, he was relegated to the Money in the Bank ladder match. Well, here we are heading into WrestleMania 1 year after Daniel Bryan won the world title, and it sure looks like he may be relegated to a multi-man ladder match. He's not their guy. He doesn't have the mainstream appeal, I guess, that they're looking for. He was part of the San Francisco Giants World Series parade last year, but not mainstream enough. He took over the Seattle Seahawks Twitter account, their official NFL Twitter account, leading up to the Super Bowl. But he's not mainstream enough. He's not their guy. He never was, and he never will be. He'll be a great guy to work with the lower card guys, get great matches out of them, and that'll be his role. So now that we've established that, and there's nothing we can do about it, let's look at the potential positives here, okay? Let's try to be positive about this. We're in a unique situation here where two of the biggest stars in the company are challenging, and again, maybe Bryan isn't. It's not confirmed that he'll be wrestling for the Intercontinental title, but it sure looks like he is. So let's just go on that assumption. Challenging for the two mid-card titles in the same company. There is a very real possibility that John Cena leaves WrestleMania as the United States champion for the first time since 2004. And then you have Daniel Bryan, who I don't think is winning the title, but if he did, he could be to that title what Nakamura has been to the Intercontinental title in New Japan. So big has Nakamura made that title that the fans voted his match to be the main event, the show-closing match for last year's Wrestle Kingdom show. Wrestle Kingdom is like their WrestleMania. And Nakamura, by the way, also happens to be Daniel Bryan's favorite wrestler in the world right now. And I'd be okay with that. If I had any faith that long-term they'd put the belt on Bryan and really make it mean something to where they could headline Raws with it, headline house shows with it. But I don't. I don't have that faith. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. I would love for them to prove me wrong on this. Bryan as the Intercontinental Champion, getting that match with, you know, Dolph Ziggler maybe on the pay-per-view after WrestleMania, maybe even, you know, doing a 2 or 3 month program for the title. That ends with a 2 out of 3 falls match, or it ends with a 30-minute Ironman match. They actually did one of those once on Raw with Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. I mean, those guys could easily go 60, but 30 minutes is probably more practical. I'd love to see it. And Bryan could work with Ambrose. He could work with some of the NXT guys that they bring up who maybe aren't quite ready yet to be in the WWE title picture. You're not going to thrust those guys right into the main event. So maybe Adrian Neville works with Daniel Bryan instead for the Intercontinental title. Or Finn Balor. Hideo Itami. Bryan and Kenta. I'm sure Bryan would love to work with him again. And when Itami comes up to the main roster, he's going to need somebody to work with who knows his style and could help make him look like he belongs there. The worst thing that could happen is they bring up Hideo Itami, you know, and they put him in a mid-card feud with Fandango. And no offense to Fandango, he's not a terrible wrestler, but that probably would be a terrible match. And that would be bad news for Hideo Itami. You've got to try to protect these guys. Bring them up, put him in there with a guy that can make him look good. So that way, in the eyes of the fans, this guy makes a good first impression. He looks like he belongs. And, I mean, God knows that Brian and Kenta back in the day had plenty of battles. I saw some of them live. There's a way to make this work if they wanted to put the title on Brian. There's a way, absolutely a way to make this work. Man, between this and my Orton Rollins idea, I'm spitting ideas out like a Pez dispenser. They should be paying me for these ideas. I should be drawing a check from these people. Ascension and the Primetime Players had a brief match that the Primetime Players won. The Ascension have lost their first match on TV. The Primetime Players beat him. It was a fluke win. Darren Young got the pin. I think it was a roll-up. And after the match was over, the Ascension just killed him dead. As soon as the bell rang, the Ascension popped right back up, killed him, threw Titus out of the ring. They laid out Darren Young with the Fall of Man. Even JBL on commentary said, boy, you know, the Primetime Players don't look like winners. Then why the fuck would you have them win? What was the point of this? I mean, what was the point of this? Who came out of this for the better when it was over? Was it the Ascension? No. The Ascension got beat by what most fans look at as a bunch of job guys. Did the Primetime Players get any more over? They got killed dead as soon as the bell rang. They looked like a bunch of goofs. And by the way, this is, I have to say this as well. You know, the Primetime Players, they came back from commercial. They were already in the ring, so they got the jobber entrance. And of course, it didn't take very long. I called it last week. It took one fucking week. They had them in the middle of the ring. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. Not even so much as an attempt to explain why Titus and Darren Young are back together. This from a company that loves to tell stories, right? That's what they always say. They're storytellers. The announcers, we're not commentating. We're not calling the holds. We're not calling the moves. We're telling stories. We're fucking Aesop. This is our fable. We're telling stories. I guess there's no story here. Because they just put the two of them back together like they never broke up in the first place. It's like it never even happened. We then had Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, who interrupted Roman Reigns. Reigns was out there for a promo. Bryan came out. And Bryan started out by saying, you know, basically, I never really liked you. I never really believed in you. I didn't think you deserved to be in the position that you were in. I mean, he was just tearing this guy apart. And the payoff here was that, well, after Fastlane, you proved to me that you do belong. You're better than me. You beat me fair and square. You're the better man. Go to WrestleMania and beat Brock Lesnar. This was basically their attempt to send Bryan out there and have him sing the praises of Roman Reigns to make Roman look strong, get this guy over any way that you can. And Bryan did his job. Now, I know it upset a lot of people. It was kind of nauseating. It was. But they made their decision. Roman Reigns is going to the main event of WrestleMania. They've committed to it. They're going all the way with it. You've got to make the guy look strong. You have to. So I thought, you know, given that that was the goal, they did about as good a job as they could. I thought Bryan was fine here. I thought he was actually really good. They sent Paul Heyman out. I mean, it was literally, I pictured in my head, like behind the curtain in the gorilla position, this long line of people that were going to trot out there to come out and make Roman look strong. Bryan wasn't even in the back before Heyman was already coming out. So Heyman comes down to the ring. Brock wasn't there. Obviously, he left. And Heyman says, you know, if this were any other era, I would pick you. My money, if I were a betting man, my money would be on you. My money would be on you in a match in the 1970s over Bruno Sammartino. My money would be on you in a match against Hulk Hogan. My money would be on you in a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that was one name too many for this crowd. When he mentioned Austin's name, nobody in the building bought it for a second. They booed. They were angry that Heyman would even invoke the name of Steve Austin. And that was when I thought they went too far. See, up to that point, I know what they were doing. They were doing as good a job as they possibly could to make Roman Reigns feel like the next big thing. But then you go and you make a stupid comment like that. It's not like Reigns is the heel and Paul Heyman is the heel manager out there to say something to kind of elicit that kind of reaction, the roll of the eyes from the crowd, like, oh my God. This guy's a babyface, and you're going to have this guy out there saying, basically, you're better than Stone Cold Steve Austin. What the hell did you think their reaction was going to be? You know what I mean? So that's when I think they went too far. Once they said Austin, that was it. Probably once they said Bruno, that was it. But once they said Austin, I thought they made a big mistake by doing that. But that's, look, it's time to make Roman look strong. And if you don't like it, that's just too bad, because he's their man. And they're going to do what they have to do to make sure that going into WrestleMania, this guy gets cheered. And I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you'll have people who cheer him, absolutely. Okay, even at the Garden the other night for the house show, when he came out, it was definitely noticeable boos, more so than cheers. By the end of the match, when he speared Rollins and got the pin, it was mostly cheers. Some weeks they're going to go to Raw, and he's going to get cheered. Some weeks they're going to go to Raw, and he's going to get booed. And I think they're actually on the East Coast. They might be in New Jersey this week. In that New York, New Jersey area, that could be bad news for Roman Reigns. So you're going to get a mix, I think, of different crowd reactions between now and the 29th, right? That's WrestleMania, I think. The thing about WrestleMania, though, and I was just having a conversation with Noah Mark about this last night, you know, you have fans coming in from all over the world for WrestleMania. Those rowdy, rabid fans you see on those post-Mania Raw shows, the reason that those crowds are like that, by and large, is because you still have people that are in town from the UK, right? So from Great Britain and from Ireland, all those people are still there, and they're going crazy, and it makes for a fun show. But those people are going to be at WrestleMania as well, and they're not going to be cheering for Roman Reigns. So the only thing you can hope is if you have a stadium with 60,000 people, and last I read, I think they had a legit 53,000 tickets sold, which seems kind of low to me, but they got a month left to go. So let's figure by game time they'll have 65,000, 70,000 people in that stadium. That's a big stadium, okay? And not all of those 70,000 people are going to boo Roman Reigns. It's not going to be these just loud, boisterous boos that overtake all of the cheers. They just have to hope there's more cheers than boos, and the only way you can do that is by building this guy up and making him look strong, and so that's what they're doing. And you'll get a nauseating segment like this every now and then. I saw the Roman Reigns sit-down interview on SmackDown with Byron Saxton. Not his best work. The thing with Reigns, he's just awkward. You know, he's awkward in those situations, and it's obvious that he's trying to remember his lines. He's taking these pauses. He's taking too long sometimes to think about the next thing he wants to say. Just let the guy do an interview. You know, when they send Roman Reigns out to do media stuff, he seems like a normal, natural, laid-back kind of guy. He's very witty. He's like a completely different person. I don't understand why you can't just give the guy bullet points and say, listen, you do your thing. Just make sure you hit on this, this, and this. Otherwise, go for it. You know? Just do it like you would do any other interview. And I watched that thing on SmackDown, and that's so obviously not what they're doing with him. And I think that's a big mistake. Because he's not terrible when it comes to stuff like that. He's only terrible when they feed him shit to say. That's not going to do him any favors. I was not a fan of that interview with Byron Saxton. We had Miz telling Mizdow that he was entering himself into this year's Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Another one of my ideas appears to be taking shape. Called it months ago. They need Miz and Mizdow in there with Mizdow getting the win. The story writes itself. And they did almost nothing with those two at the Royal Rumble, and that was when it really clinched it for me, and I thought, okay, the reason for that is that they're saving it for the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And so now Miz is in there. Mizdow is not officially in yet, but he will be. And I still say he's winning the whole thing. Jack Swagger beats Stardust off the distraction submission finish. That's what this was. Goldust came out on stage. He stood there. Stardust was distracted. And so instead of rolling him up for the pin, Swagger rolled him up, turned it into an ankle lock that Cody tapped way too quickly to. I mean, it was ridiculous. So he tapped out. I like how WWE now cleverly trying to find new ways to avoid bumping up our distractionrollup.com counter. I decided that this would not count towards the counter because unlike WWE with its storylines, we maintain some consistency here on the Sound Off. That was not a roll-up, so therefore it does not count. John Cena and Rusev had dueling promos where Rusev outright refused to give Cena a rematch for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. And you know what? He shouldn't. John Cena was the challenger going into the last pay-per-view, and he lost. He was not the champion. He has not earned an automatic rematch. He was the challenger, and he got beat. He does not deserve a rematch. They introduced Paige and Emma for a match with the Bella Twins and told us that Divas Action was up next. And then they promptly cut to commercial break. When they came back, they aired a 5-minute Sting video package. So I don't know if their lines got crossed up here and they weren't supposed to say next, but they said Divas are next and instead we got a Sting video. Paige had to stand out there during the entire thing. I've been to these Raw tapings before where they do this. They literally will turn the house lights down, and whether it's a diva or whoever is in the ring, they'll just stand there. They'll stand there for 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, and then they'll raise the lights, they'll raise the music, so it almost is like the music never stopped. I mean, it's comical. So she had to stand out there for the entire thing. And then, you all know what happened by now. It sparked outrage online. Paige was knocked off the apron immediately. Emma tried to check on her. She got attacked from behind by Brie and pinned in 30 seconds. For those newer listeners who wonder why I started the Diva stopwatch, because every now and then I'll get a message or a tweet, why do you do that? Why do you do the stopwatch? Or why do you do it only for the Divas and not for any other matches? This match was the reason why. Because back in the day, believe it or not, it used to be much worse. We would get matches that weren't even this long every single week. I don't even know how long I've been doing the stopwatch for at this point. It's been at least a few years. So believe it or not, it used to be worse. This used to be commonplace. So this was the first time we've had a legit 30-second Divas match in a long time, and it pissed a lot of people off. And I was left thinking to myself, why even have a division? You know? Why even bother? Just send them all to NXT. Make the women an exclusive part of NXT. Because this is pointless. This is absolutely pointless. You have 3 fucking hours of television every Monday night. What does a match like that accomplish? I mean, really, what does it accomplish? At least when Ronda Rousey's fights end in 14 seconds, it's because Ronda Rousey doesn't give any of the women a chance. It's not Dana White's fault. What's Vince's excuse? It's like before the women even come out of the curtain, they're already getting the sign from the agent to go home. Which actually, I'd say that because there were people in the later days of WCW who used to joke. This would have been like 99, 2000. There would be matches on Nitro where as the guy was about to come through the curtain, he wasn't even in the ring yet, and he already had people telling him to go home. I imagine that it's probably not all that different with the women. You know, I mean, maybe they were allotted more time, but the show ran long. You know what, even if that's the case, and I'm not even sure that is, it could have been planned 30 seconds from the beginning, but even if they were going to be given 3 minutes and their time got cut, it's always the women. It's always the women who have their time cut. And we actually had the Bella Twins a few weeks ago publicly in an interview, or maybe they were at like a Comic-Con type thing, I don't know where they were, but they outright said that it bothers them. And they've complained about it, and it's not fair to them, and here that, you know, now they're in a position where they could say that sort of thing because of who they're with. So they're probably less worried of speaking out than, let's say, some other random diva might be. You know, but they know the deal. The Bellas are no different than Paige and Emma and the rest of them. They get screwed just like everybody else. So it sparked this whole hashtag movement on Twitter. Hashtag give divas a chance. Vince McMahon actually tweeted this out in response. He said, "We hear you. Keep watching. Hashtag give divas a chance." So I guess they're trying to portray it as, no, maybe it's now part of an angle. It's going somewhere. Just bear with us. Boy, this is the longest angle I've ever seen. We got to give WWE a lot of credit for this. If this is some long angle with a payoff, this angle's been going on for years. Longest angle I ever saw. Which leads me to the AJ Lee, Stephanie McMahon stuff. AJ Lee, who has been out with a neck injury since December, went on Twitter this week after the whole give divas a chance movement, and after Stephanie McMahon tweeted her support of Patricia Arquette. Patricia Arquette's an actress. She won an Oscar. She used her acceptance speech last weekend to talk about wage inequality for women here in this country. When Stephanie spoke up in support of Arquette and she used the hashtag #useyourvoice, she opened herself up big time and AJ just went right in, all in on her. AJ directed 2 tweets to Stephanie that read, "Your female wrestlers have record-selling merchandise and have starred in the highest-rated segment of the show several times, and yet they receive a fraction of the wages and screen time of the majority of the male roster." Stephanie then replied with, "Thank you, AJ Lee, I appreciate your opinion." Yeah, right. It doesn't appear to be an angle. Stephanie was said to be furious about it. Vince told her to respond the way that she did, not make this into a bigger deal. Between the punk accusations and the independent contractor versus employee issue and the lawsuits from people like Big Vito and Mabel's widow, the last thing they need to deal with are stories about their treatment of the women. I said last week, you know, with their doctor suing Punk and WWE's apparent ass fetish that they have for CM Punk with that video, I'd be surprised to see AJ back on TV. Stephanie supposedly hates Punk's guts even more than Triple H does. There's a lot of hatred there. I never thought for a second that the Punk stuff was an angle. This, I could see turning into an angle and leading to something. It's not out of the question. It's still very unlikely, but I think there's a better chance of that happening here than there ever was with Punk last year. You know, remember, I pitched the idea of a Stephanie vs. AJ match for WrestleMania 31 back on SoundOff 364 in January, all the way back in like mid-January. I said that this is the biggest Divas match that WWE could do right now. We're only, you know, we've only seen flashes of something between them on television over the last couple of years, a segment here, a segment there, usually with Stephanie towering over AJ and talking down to her, as Stephanie does with everybody on the roster, male or female, making them look inferior. That's her thing. AJ, you know, would give Stephanie a death glare, and it would usually get a nice pop from the crowd. People seem to be into the idea of AJ and Stephanie, and then they never would do anything with it. I've always felt like it was a big match if they ever wanted to pull the trigger on it. Now might just be the time to do it, you know, but the problem with that is that that would require WWE to put their feelings aside and not take their anger out on AJ. And on top of that, they'd have to book a match that AJ would have to win. AJ would have to triumph over Stephanie McMahon in the end for this to work, and that's, you know, that's a little harder to see that happening. The McMahons would have to take their egos and kind of lock them away in a vault under lock and key for that to happen. You know, everybody loves to make fun of the whole make Roman look strong thing. The one person who's made to look even stronger on the roster than Roman Reigns is Stephanie McMahon. I'm still shocked they let Vicky Guerrero throw her in that mud pit on the way out of the company when she left. Because aside from that, I'm not going back to Stephanie back in like 10, 12 years ago. I'm talking like in recent years, since the Authority angle started, which feels like years at this point, she is made to look stronger than anybody else on that roster. Even Triple H. Even more than Roman Reigns. Stephanie McMahon is the one person. The Bushwhackers were officially announced for the Hall of Fame. You look at their run in WWE, and then you look at the rest of their career as the Sheepherders, which they very briefly, I don't even think they mentioned them as the Sheepherders. They had, for like 5 seconds, they had a clipping from a magazine, and they kind of alluded to the fact that they had a career outside of WWE for a while before they came over. I mean, that was the extent to which they mentioned anything other than their babyface Bushwhacker run, which I expected. I didn't expect they were going to really spend much time talking about the other stuff at all. But I was thinking about this, and when you look at their run in WWE and the rest of their career, I've decided that the Bushwhackers are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles of WWE. You know, as a kid, I used to see the Turtles eating pizza on Saturday mornings, cracking jokes. I had no idea that originally in the comics, they were bred to be these killing machines. They murdered people in cold blood. In WWE, the Bushwhackers were these goofy-looking guys who marched around, they licked people's faces. But before that, they were the hardest of hardcore heels that you could find. They were slicing people open in barbed wire matches, doing double juice matches. Just like the Turtles, they were these vicious killers turned into a PG kiddie act. And just like the Turtles, what they'll be remembered for is the goofy PG stuff. Curtis Axel is now wearing a Hulkamania knockoff shirt that says Axelmania on it. To me, the most amazing part about this whole thing was that my Solomonster shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees looks more authentic than the knockoff that Axel is using. And he works for the damn company. Cheap plug, by the way. We've got that shirt both in red and yellow in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees, in case you didn't know. Ryback squashed Axel quickly. Ryback will also be in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Main event was Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan against Randy Orton and Seth Rollins. Bryan pinned Rollins with the flying knee. Reigns and Bryan got along just fine. Orton and Rollins, a little bit of dissension there at the end. Orton did lay out, I believe, Joey Mercury with an RKO and regained his composure, told Seth it's okay, and Orton walked out. Very odd ending to Raw this past Monday night. They actually went off the air with a network plug. It was the one-year anniversary of the WWE Network. And to go back to what I was talking about before with the Bushwhackers, I just thought of this. You know what? I've decided I want the Ninja Turtles to be the ones to induct the Bushwhackers into the Hall of Fame. I want four guys in the full getup in the Ninja Turtle costumes. I want Leonardo, Raphael, Michelangelo, Donatello. You want to send Splinter out there? Send the hairy motherfucker out there? I don't care. I want them to induct the Bushwhackers into the Hall of Fame and to do the Bushwhacker dance on stage. Because you know what? If you're going to have this goofy shit going on, you may as well go all the way with it. That's what pro wrestling is all about, right? So, fuck it. Just go all the way with it. I want to see the Ninja Turtles induct the Bushwhackers into the Hall of Fame this year. We got to get some campaign going on social media to make this happen. So, get on that, people. I wasn't really a fan of this week's NXT, and it, you know, pains me to say that coming off last week's show, which I thought was awesome. It wasn't a bad show, just not as much fun as it usually is. Some of that may have been having Alex Riley back on commentary, although by the end of the show, Kevin Owens became my new favorite wrestler, which we'll get to. Show opened with Hideo Itami beating Bull Dempsey. As he was backing up the ramp, Tyler Breeze attacked Itami from behind, and then, see, this was awesome. This was awesome. He's got this long, furry selfie stick that he carries around with him now, and so he's holding it up, and he's trying to get a shot of himself that has Itami laying on the floor in the background. And so he's trying to set this shot up just perfectly. He keeps moving forward. He's trying to get the right angle. He takes so long to try to set this shot up that Itami gets up. And you just see Breeze standing there with the stick and Itami with this look on his face. Just standing in the background like, I kill you now. And so he chases Breeze into the ring, kicks him around a little bit. Breeze scampers off through the crowd. So it looks like this feud is going to continue, and I'm okay with that. I'd rather not have Tyler Breeze just fade back into obscurity for another 6 weeks until they come up with a new program for him. So it's fine with me. We were then told that tonight's main event would be Finn Balor against the Brian Kendrick. What? That came out of nowhere. No explanation, no nothing. They aired a video package with the old clips of him doing the Brian Kendrick gimmick on SmackDown, which he only did for a few months. We got glimpses of Big Rick from Lucha Underground, Ezekiel Jackson in the background as his bodyguard. They were trying to do the whole Diesel Shawn Michaels thing with them back then. They didn't give it enough time or else maybe it would have actually worked, but they've got the attention span of a four-year-old, so it went nowhere. I remember the gimmick was Jackson looked like this big giant muscle head, which I guess he was, but backstage, they'd show him reading books while, you know, Kendrick would cut promos. Like, he was a very intelligent guy, but he could also kick your ass. That was kind of the gimmick with Jackson at the time. And they didn't mention this, but did you know? Here's a fun fact for you. Did you know that the Brian Kendrick was, for a few minutes anyway, once upon a time, recognized on screen with a graphic as the new WWE champion? Because he was. He was in that scramble match they did. Anyway, this was the second week in a row they've trotted out a mid-card guy from years ago. Last week it was Rhino, this week it was Kendrick, maybe next week they'll bring back Trevor Murdoch, or maybe Bam Neely. Remember Bam Neely? No? Neither do 95% of the people listening to this podcast. These people are returning to NXT. The gimmick is that they're here to kickstart their careers. Their careers have hit the skids, and so now they're back. NXT is the hot thing, and they're going to come back and kind of get back their former glory. That's the storyline. WWE on Twitter posted a tweet that said, with the returns of Rhino and Brian Kendrick to NXT, who else should come back? And in the image, they had Chris Masters and Carlito and Michelle McCool. No. Just no. If it's for a week, if it's for a few weeks, and they put some dudes over and they disappear, great. I'm fine with that. But I do not want this to become a weekly thing. Because what happens then is that people start to think, oh, well, NXT is on. And so I'll tune into NXT just to see the next old guy that they might bring back this week. And we can chant, ECW, ECW. That is not the reason why people should want to watch NXT. Just to see the old guys come back for a nostalgia pop. You want to do that on Raw? Be my guest. But that is not why people should want to watch NXT. Devin Taylor was backstage doing her usual, how do you feel interviews? How do you feel? How do you feel? I think it's literally the only question she knows how to ask. She should have been a doctor. Lucha Dragons against Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger. During their entrance, Solomon Crowe hacked into the broadcast, cut a short promo, vowing to win the NXT Championship. So it looks like they are sticking with the hacker gimmick after all. Match was short, just a way to really break up the team of Jordan and Dillinger, which is what I feared they were going to do. There was some tension during the match. Nothing major. You know, Dillinger was in there, I guess, hogging too much spotlight, wouldn't tag in Jordan. You know, in a two-minute match, he was hogging up all the spotlight. So when Dillinger finally went for the tag, Jordan did the old hop down off the apron to walk out bit, leaving his partner high and dry. Sloppy-looking Salida del Sol from Kalisto and a senton from Sin Cara ended the match. When they came back from break, Dillinger is still out there. He's calling out Jason Jordan, wants him to come back out. Instead, he gets Baron Corbin. And you know how this goes. 20 seconds, end of days, 1, 2, 3. Quick win for Corbin. I would say the Dillinger is on the endangered species list. If I were him, I would be worried. I was shocked when they brought him back. Yeah, he was on their ECW roster years ago, and they let him go. He was Sean Spears. They called him Gavin Spears, and they let him go. Now they broke up this team. They clearly have big plans for Jason Jordan. I mean, the guy looks like $1 million, and apparently he's a hell of an athlete. He played 2 or 3 different sports, so I'm sure they're going to give him the big push. Next time they do a round of NXT cuts, don't be surprised to hear Ty Dillinger's name on that list. Sami Zayn is in fact still alive. He will be back next week after his recent trip to Abu Dhabi, where he was treated like a major star. They had clips of him being greeted like this conquering hero over there. Becky Lynch beat Bayley in a good match. Bayley is showing more fire and more aggression in her matches, even though she still comes out to the amazing giant inflatable tube men, which I hope she never stops doing. I cannot wait to see those things on Raw. Becky won with a submission armbar, a very painful looking armbar, an armbar that made me cringe. That's how real this thing looked. And so the streak continues. Yet another diva with an absolutely devastating looking submission hold. We got a backstage Rhino promo. He talked about goring people. Can I make a comment here? It's my show, so I guess I can. I can say whatever I want to. Am I the only one who gets annoyed by these backstage promos where the person being interviewed looks off camera while they're talking? It's bad enough they don't look into the camera anymore, but they rarely even look at the person who's asking the question. I mean, they'll glance down at them every now and then, but they're just looking off into space. It's like they're reading off cue cards. And what's worse is also the way they shoot these things. You know, so I would be very interested to hear. I know we have some production people who listen to this show. Instead of a stationary camera, they have a dude holding the camera, and he's standing off center. So when you look in the background, you see part of the backdrop that they use for these interviews, but he's far enough off to the side where he's filming half of the backdrop, and the other half is just whatever the fuck happens to be in the background. It could be darkness, it could be a black curtain, or whatever, a lighting pole. Why even bother having a backdrop if you're going to stand off to the side and only film half of it? It kind of kills the illusion, don't you think? I mean, just knock the fucking thing down and stand in a hallway somewhere and do the interview if that's what you're going to do. Anyway, minor point. Minor point, but it annoys me. You know, people ask me all the time, Solomonster, if you were in charge of WWE, what big changes would you make? You know what? Forget creative. If I were in charge, I'd be more fixated on changing things like camera angles backstage and not lingering awkwardly on people at the end of a segment, which they do all the time. You know, it's the little things like that that bug me the most. Maybe it's my OCD kicking in. Main event was Balor and Kendrick. Kevin Owens was out there on commentary, and he was glorious. He's got that character nailed down. Kendrick tweaked his ankle, or he feigned tweaking his ankle early in the match, and Balor showed some remorse. And Kevin Owens pointed out that right there is the reason why he will not be NXT champion. You can never show remorse for your opponent. And Alex Riley, who has been just, he was grating on my nerves the entire show. He started to do the same thing to Kevin Owens, asking him, how could you do what you did to somebody who you considered your best friend? He just wouldn't let it go. This was almost as bad as when they had Neville on commentary. Owens just gave Riley this death stare, and then finally said, you know what, I'm going to leave before I do something I might regret. And so off he went. And that's when the match picked up. Kendrick nailed an absolutely sick-looking tiger suplex on Balor. I thought he broke the dude's neck. Balor comes back, sling blade, drop kick in the corner, and the coup de grace double foot stomp off the top row for the pin. Kevin Owens then walked back out. He locked eyes with Finn Balor from afar. And then Owens very casually sauntered back over to the announce table and turned instant babyface when he grabbed Alex Riley and hurled him. He hurled his ass over the announce desk and onto the floor. My only complaint is that he didn't powerbomb him on the edge of the ring so they could take Riley out on a stretcher, which leaves the door open for him to be back on commentary next week. I know Riley wants to wrestle again. I ended up taking him off the Raw pre- and post-game shows. Maybe they'll end up doing a Riley-Owens match, and Owens will kill him there. I hope so. I want to see Kevin Owens kill Alex Riley. Is that too much to ask? Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Samoa Joe is on his way back to Ring of Honor. First time he'll be there since 2008 when he left. He was the longest reigning champion in ROH history. 645 days. Take that, CM Punk, as the ROH champion. Joe has signed on for dates on March 7th in Baltimore, March 13th in Milwaukee, March 14th in Chicago Ridge, and March 27th, which I believe is their WrestleMania weekend show in Redwood City, California. I believe he may have a couple more dates in April. WWE supposedly has made Joe an offer, which is not shocking because, as I've said before on this podcast, Triple H is a fan of Joe's work. I could see him wanting to bring Samoa Joe to NXT, especially if the plan is to start promoting guys like Sami Zayn and Finn Balor and Adrian Neville. These guys are not going to be at NXT forever. Again, guys like Zayn and Neville have already been there for 2 years or more. At some point, whether we like it or not, they're going to come up to the main roster. And I have a feeling that Finn Balor is going to be on the main roster very soon. In fact, I see Balor on Raw as early as the night after WrestleMania. So if those guys leave, if they take even two, let alone three, of those big-name guys over the next 3 months, 6 months, and they promote them to the main roster, they're going to have a big void that they have to fill. So if those guys leave, and then Joe finishes up his dates with ROH in April, and he shows up on NXT, that would fill a pretty big hole. And interestingly, some indie promoters have been told, they've been posting about it on Facebook, that Joe is apparently not taking any bookings after April 23rd. April 23rd also happens to be an NXT TV taping, so let the speculation begin. It's like I said last week, I mean, this guy just floundered in TNA for almost a decade, right? 9 years, something like that. He's been a complete non-factor over the last few years. The guy leaves TNA and almost overnight, all of a sudden, he's a sensation again. People can't stop talking about him. He's getting offers from every which way. He may end up in WWE. If not, I see him going to Japan. It's just a reflection of the state of TNA right now more than anything else. And again, I didn't see Impact this week. I can't really review it. I'll try to watch it later. I know there was an MVP Bobby Lashley title match. I want to check that out at least. So let's just move into Lucha Underground. I did catch Lucha Underground this week, episode 16, I believe. Rey Mysterio is likely on his way here. That was the other big story. There was so much news up front to cover that I didn't even get to this. Rey Mysterio officially got his release this week from WWE after a nearly 13-year stint there. AAA down in Mexico has a press conference set for Tuesday that a lot of people figure Rey Mysterio will have a lot to do with that press conference, and he will also end up in Lucha Underground as Alberto Del Rio did. So I guess we'll see. One match after another on this show got chance of This Is Awesome. So the first one got This Is Awesome chance, and then the next one got This Is Awesome chance, and the next one got This Is Awesome chance. So we had some great action on the show. I do have to say, I thought the opener with Aerostar and Drago, Drago's one of my favorites, I do like him, even though he loses a lot. I thought it was really sloppy. You know, must have been even worse, because what we got here was the edited version. So, just not a great match. Aerostar won with the springboard splash off the ropes. Two of them showed respect to each other after the match, and then Dario Cueto emerged from his office and basically said he's not having any of that shit, and said the two of them would have a 2 out of 3 falls match, presumably next week, with the winner earning a unique opportunity. He did not tell us what that unique opportunity is. Cage and Prince Puma, non-title match. Cage won in a great match. All action, tons of near falls. Cage is super athletic for a guy his size. Conan returned here. We haven't seen him since he got laid out by Cage and did the blade job all those weeks ago. Near the finish, he came out. He ended up throwing in the towel for Puma, who was getting just decimated in there. So that means Cage gets another shot at the title. Puma has had quite the unremarkable title reign so far. But seriously, this was a really, really, really good match. And if you pick one match from this show to go watch, you know what? It's hard to say because the main event was also really good. I would just watch the whole thing. It was a good show. Back in Dario Cueto's office, Sexy Star is not happy about the crew taking out Pimpinella Escarlata and Masquerita Sagrada last week. And Cueto points out that Big Rick also has a problem with the crew, and since she wants to fight them alone all by herself, he makes a match next week between Sexy Star and Big Rick. And it was at that point that I really felt, you know, I'm getting a little tired of all the intergender matches. I mean, it makes the product different. There were some matches you could do like that that I'm okay with. Like, Ivelisse had a match with Angelico last week, and that was fine. But, you know, Sexy Star and Big Rick, yeah, probably more angle than match, I'm guessing, but not really a fan of that. This one, I think, is going to test my patience. I'll give it a chance. We'll see. Pentagon Jr. beat Vinny Massaro, no relation to Ashley, I don't think. He then grabbed a table, powerbombed poor Vinny through it, and used the armbar to break his arm. See, this guy here, Pentagon Jr., is my favorite wrestler in Lucha Underground right now. He just comes to work, breaks dudes' arms, nothing fancy about it. That's it. It's a scary dude to go in that ring with. Plus, I think his makeup, his look, he's my favorite guy there. Johnny Mundo and King Cuerno in the main event had quite the battle, ended in a double countout after Cuerno nailed 3 consecutive arrow dives through the ropes onto Mundo. After that last one, he was back up to his feet in time to get back in the ring and beat the count, but he didn't do that. He just kind of stood there and got counted out. I thought that looked weird. Fight continued on the outside, up the steps, through the crowd. Wild finish to the show. I've read there was a final segment where Black Lotus, Angela Fong, is locked in a car trunk and gets saved by some dude in a mask, but it got cut off. The version I watched cut off, I guess. See, I don't get El Rey, so I only watch what I can find online after it airs. I get the Spanish language version, I think, on Saturdays, but I'm usually busy when it airs. It doesn't air until like 4 o'clock on Saturdays. So I have to seek out Lucha Underground online, however I can find it. And I guess in the one that I watched, the ending got cut off. Anyway, there's your Lucha Underground review. A good show this week, so check it out. Let's move into the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. You can also attach MP3 audio questions. Try to keep them to about 30 seconds or so. And again, please include your name and where you are from so I know how to identify you. I got a lot of questions from you guys about the incident that took place in Japan last weekend. So I wanted to address it here, so this is more of another segment before I get into your other questions. Last weekend, I started getting tweets from people asking me if I heard about what happened in Japan with Yoshiko. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, at first, all I could think is, something happened with the blow-up doll? I was thinking of Yoshihiko, the doll that Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega would wrestle in the DDT promotion. And then I realized it wasn't the blow-up doll, and this wasn't a funny story. Last weekend, there was a match between 2 female wrestlers in Japan, and it got ugly, very ugly. And this Yoshiko woman decided, for whatever reason, that she didn't very much like her opponent, Act Yasukawa, and she decided to shoot on her. And I saw the video of it, I posted it in our Facebook group and on Twitter. It's pretty graphic. one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen inside a wrestling ring, even more than Big Show and Kane still wrestling in main events. And as soon as the bell rings, this Yoshiko woman just starts beating the crap out of this poor girl. Breaks her orbital bone. She beat her so bad that both eyes were swollen shut and she was blind to the point where her mother had to type out a blog post for her because she couldn't do it herself. She suffered a broken nose, a concussion, just blood everywhere. This was not an MMA fight. This was not a worked angle. This was a blatant disregard for someone else's safety, a violation of the trust that exists between two pro wrestlers when they step into the ring. You're putting your life, you're putting your safety in the hands of your opponent at all times. The real art of pro wrestling is giving the illusion that you are hurting your opponent when in reality, you're not harming a hair on their head. I've heard Bret Hart say that a million times, and it's so true. Anybody can get in the ring and punch somebody in the face for real. That's not pro wrestling. Now, what her motivations were, it may have been jealousy. I think she's only 21, 22. She's young, she's immature. Who the hell knows? And you know what? Who cares? It was a premeditated attack. She went right after the girl's eye. She knew that ACT had surgery on her eye to fix a vision problem that she had. There's a great, great interview that was done with her last year that I linked to on Twitter on Wednesday. So go back on my timeline and find it if you didn't read it. She has an incredible story. She was bullied as a kid to the point where she almost committed suicide. She was born almost blind in her right eye from something called Graves' disease. She had she'd gone totally blind in the eye and had an operation last year to correct it. And that was the same eye that this woman went after. She knew that she had the problem. She knew that she had the eye operated on. She had just come back from it. And she went after the bad eye. How sick is that? She had just come back after her recovery. And now she may never see out of that eye ever again. So they've announced the punishment for Yoshiko is an indefinite suspension. She's also been stripped of her Stardom title. The owner and the general manager of the promotion are each giving themselves a 30% pay cut for the next 3 months as, I guess, a form of self-punishment. That's all well and nice, but this she-beast needs to be fired and charged with aggravated assault or whatever the equivalent charge would be in Japan. She wants to act like an animal, she deserves to be locked up like one. That's what I say. Suspension is not enough. She should never be allowed to set foot inside a wrestling ring ever again. Never, ever. Fernando from Bogota, Colombia. My question is regarding NXT. I just saw on Facebook that Brian Kendrick is on his way to NXT, and with Rhino as part of the roster, which former WWE, WCW, or ECW wrestler would you like to see on NXT? I would rather see them developing new wrestlers at Full Sail, but some guys can be big stars if they are given one more chance. Well, I guess I kind of answered that one earlier. I mean, you already said it yourself. I want to see new guys developed on NXT. I don't want to start saturating a one-hour show with a bunch of has-beens. If Christian were healthy, he's already under contract. I'd love to see him work with some of the newer guys. I think Christian is one of the most underrated in-ring performers they've ever had, but he's not healthy. Okay, he's done. 5 years ago, I'd have loved to have seen Shelton Benjamin on a show like NXT, tearing it up with these guys, but now he's almost 40. Shelton is almost 40 years old, and not for nothing, he's wrestling over in New Japan, and he's nothing special. I'm over the whole Shelton Benjamin thing. He's not even in the middle tier of talent over in New Japan right now. So no, I cannot think of anybody I would like to bring back from the old days to NXT. This comes from Kyle. I was just thinking of Umaga and his career in WWE. Do you think he will ever go into the Hall of Fame? Sure, why not? Bushwhackers are going in. At least Umaga was one half of one of the biggest money matches in Mania history. Even though it had absolutely nothing to do with him, you could have probably plugged anybody in there, but they picked him, and that Trump match did huge business. Everybody goes into the Hall of Fame. That's my attitude about it at this point. There's nobody who doesn't qualify unless they killed their family. Apparently, that's the kind of the line of demarcation here. You know, when you commit a heinous act like that, you don't go into the Hall of Fame. Otherwise, everybody goes in. Val Venus will get into the Hall of Fame. Charles Wright, for all of the gimmicks that he's portrayed over the years, Papa Shango, Kama, the Godfather, the Good Father, they're all going in, because eventually they're going to run out of names. So sure, Umaga goes in at some point, not for a few years, but yeah, he goes in at some point. They love that Samoan family. There's one family Vince McMahon has treated like gold more than any other family over the years. More than the Harts, the Von Erichs, the Guerreros. It's the Samoans. And Umaga was a well-liked guy, so he'll get in. If it's my Hall of Fame, he doesn't get in. But the WWE Hall of Fame? Sure. I don't see why not. Julian Cannon. Taz mentioned on his podcast that WWE should mention other promotions on their show like ROH and New Japan. He also brought up that TNA is not afraid to do it. I have noticed that they mention other promotions more often during their broadcast ever since they moved to Destination America. Do you believe that while TNA was on Spike TV, they could not mention other promotions on their show? Well, they did mention other promotions on their show while they were on Spike. They mentioned WWE every other week. I mean, maybe they're doing it more often now. I haven't really noticed. I don't think it had anything to do with Spike putting a gag on them when it came to talking about other promotions. And Taz saying, you know, hey, look, TNA does it, and so WWE should too. Of course TNA does it. Right now, they're a non-entity. They have no buzz. They're on a dead channel doing 0.4 ratings every week. When you're in second place, some might even argue third place, you do things like that. If you're WWE and you're number one, what's the incentive to start plugging other products like ROH and New Japan? Especially now, as boring as the product is most weeks when I tune into Raw, the last thing they want to do is let their audience know that there's better wrestling out there that doesn't make you want to rip your hair out. If I were in charge, personally, my philosophy, I wouldn't ignore other promotions. I'd be okay with name-dropping them when I bring new guys in, for example. If you bring a guy like Kenta in, you can mention Pro Wrestling Noah. If you bring a guy like Kevin Steen in, you can mention ROH. That's cool. I wouldn't ignore it and pretend like it doesn't exist the way the WWE does now. But when you're number one, you don't have to do that. When you're a distant second or third, of course you'll mention other promotions. You'll do whatever it takes to make your own product sound relevant. St. Clair Isuka from Los Angeles, California. What injury do you think had the most impact on wrestling? Triple H tearing his quad, Stone Cold's neck injuries, or Shawn Michaels' back injury? Well, we could take the Triple H quad tear and put that on the side, because that doesn't even come close to comparing to the other two in terms of the overall impact on wrestling. Yeah, that's a tough one. I would be more inclined to lean towards Shawn's back injury, and I'll tell you why. Because if Shawn Michaels doesn't hurt his back, then there's no reason for him to leave. And if we have a mostly healthy Shawn Michaels who's the champion, who's on top, who's already on record as saying, I won't lay down for anybody, he was generally a prick back then, you have to ask yourself, you know, how does that affect the WrestleMania 14 main event? Does he put over Steve Austin? Does he not put over Steve Austin? And if he doesn't put over Steve Austin, then what impact does that have on the Stone Cold character and his career in WWE and the Austin McMahon stuff? Does it just delay it a little bit longer? Does it completely derail it altogether? If Shawn Michaels is a constant factor during that Attitude Era, there's no telling how different things might have been for Austin. But you know what? I will say this. I think Austin would have become a big star no matter what. I would ask that question more in terms of The Rock. Because there's already stories about Triple H and Shawn back in like 99 playing politics. They didn't want Rock in the WrestleMania 15 main event. They lobbied. They actively lobbied for Mick Foley to be the one to wrestle Austin. And in the end, Foley came in. He was like a referee at the end of the match. But, you know, Rock got the spot. And I think that was also a source of discontent with Rock and Shawn. It wasn't just the stories of, you know, Shawn when he was a young wrestler kind of mistreating or disrespecting Rock's grandmother when she promoted a wrestling show and they brought them in Hawaii. I mean, there's different reasons why Rock did not like Shawn Michaels and refused to work a match with him, and we never got that match. But part of it was there were forces that were conspiring against Rock who were jealous of Rock's success at the time. And it could have been a very different scene, I think, in WWE, especially for a guy like Rock. Because like I said, Austin was going to make it no matter what. It might have been delayed a little bit if Shawn played games. But what about Rock? Okay, maybe Shawn wouldn't have been able to stop the Austin machine, but he damn well would have tried to stop the Rock machine. I don't doubt that for a second. And then who knows what happens with Rock's career, you know, if that happens. So I think Shawn Michaels not getting hurt and sticking around would have been... It would have made for an interesting time in the Attitude Era, but I actually think it would have been a big negative for a lot of other guys who ended up becoming big stars in the Attitude Era. And if those guys don't become big stars or don't become big stars as quickly, who knows what kind of cascading effect that could have. Remember, they were in the middle of a wrestling war at that time. Part of the reason that WWF was able to overtake WCW was the emergence of Austin, the emergence of Rock. Those were the two guys, Austin and Rock. And you had Undertaker, true. You had Triple H. Those guys were important to a point in terms of the main event scene in WWE. But the guys that were having an impact were guys like Austin and Rock. Those were the guys. And so I would go with Shawn's back injury. Now, Austin, if he didn't mess up his neck. Now, Austin already had neck issues before wrestling. You know, Austin's neck issues were a combination of the wear and tear from wrestling and football injuries. And the spinal stenosis is not just from when Owen Hart dropped him on his head. He healed up from that injury. You know, that was a spinal bruise. That's not really what ended his career. Maybe it sped things up a little bit. Had Austin not had to retire in 2003, I don't know. I mean, you know, they would have made money, I'm sure, off a couple of other big Austin matches. They could have done Austin Brock Lesnar at some point. It's hard to say how much longer Austin would have been able to go on. His knees were also bad. He had the two knee braces. I can't tell you that Austin would have had another 5 or 10 years had it not been for the neck injuries, but he would have had a few more years, absolutely. And, you know, they would have made a lot of money off some big Austin matches. Maybe he wouldn't have had to have altered his style so much. He used to be more of a technical guy, and when he got hurt, he turned into a brawler, you know, as a wrestler. Like, he loves to use the word mechanic, right? As a mechanic, Austin was nowhere near in 98, 99 what he was in, let's say, 96. So, yeah, things would have been different, but I look at that Michaels back injury, and I got to tell you, I think that would have really been a disruptive force during that Attitude Era. And if it is, and he's playing games and just generally being Shawn Michaels, as he was back then, I think that could have had a detrimental effect on WWE. And so for that reason, I'll go with Shawn. Steven writes in, I came across an old sound off on my MP3 player, episode 335, right after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view from 2014. Ironically, this was the debut of the sound off throwback feature. On that episode, you predicted that people would boo Roman Reigns for being too Cena-like. Will sound-off throwbacks make their way back to the podcast? It is possible, but there's no more throwbacks for the time being because there's just so much other content to cover. And now we have Lucha Underground in here. So it really is more of a time issue than anything else. I will try to fit them in more often when I can. But since you just mentioned it, sound-off episode 335 back in July, that sounds like a hell of a throwback to go back to here. So here it is. This is the audio that Steven was referring to from Soundoff 335 all the way back last summer. You can't pinpoint one reason why people hate John Cena. They're just sick of seeing him. They're sick of seeing him, and they resent the fact that he's been shoved down their throats for so long, which is what they have to try to avoid doing with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is over. There's going to be people who start to boo him soon. I guarantee you. I guarantee you, especially if the idea is to keep pushing him until he beats Brock for the title of WrestleMania, if that's the plan. There's a pretty good chance that Roman Reigns will end WrestleMania next year winning the championship. And I'm okay with that. But that means they're going to be pushing this guy hard for the next 8, 9, 10 months, and probably a lot longer than that. And if he wins the title, it's going to be worse. Because their idea is for him to be the next John Cena. So I guarantee you right now, you're going to get those people who start very loudly and noticeably booing Roman Reigns before long. Man, it's like I'm a prophet or something. I love how not only did I nail it, I nailed it on the exact point of them turning him into Cena. It wasn't just, oh, Roman Reigns is going to get booed. I was very specific, and this goes back to July. It's very specific that he's going to get booed largely because they try to make him into the next John Cena. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. Here we are all these months later, and they made that exact mistake. They're trying to turn Roman Reigns into something that he's not. He is not John Cena. John Cena is John Cena. Roman Reigns has to be Roman Reigns. And I think over time, hopefully, they'll figure that out, and they'll let him be more like himself. But until then, he's going to get mixed reactions. There's going to be people who resent him for it. It's not his fault, but that's exactly what they're doing with him. If you have questions for the mailbag, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster is my handle. We have a Facebook profile page, facebook.com/thesolomonster. We also have a fan page that you can like, and you will have to like in order to gain access to the private discussion group that we have on there as well. I mentioned earlier I don't give nearly enough love to our Instagram page. My handle on there is TheSolomonster. Same handle on YouTube, TheSolomonster. You'll find the page there. Hit the subscribe button whenever new content goes up. You will be the first to be made aware of it. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. Use our Audible link as well, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Buy a shirt in our pro wrestling tee store. All of those things, all three of those things, are really helpful to me and the show as far as showing your support. The best thing you could do is just to keep spreading the word about the podcast and keep listening every week. And here's another thing you can do. Stream the show on Stitcher Radio, because that always helps our ranking on Stitcher. Even if you listen to only part of the show, a few minutes here, a few minutes there, do us a solid, listen to us on Stitcher. I know the show doesn't always go up immediately on Stitcher when it posts on Podbean and iTunes. There's nothing I can do about that. I push the show out to one feed, and from there, it automatically goes out to everybody else. I know Stitcher last weekend was having some issues with everybody's show, getting it up quick enough. So I don't know when the show ultimately ends up on Stitcher. It could be within an hour. It could be 9 hours. There's no way to know. But please keep checking, and when it does go up, stream us on there, because that's very helpful. You can also leave us a review in Stitcher and iTunes. You can rate us on a scale of 1 star to 5 stars. I'm very happy to say that we are a 5-star rated podcast, well over 200 reviews in iTunes. So please leave some love there. And we'll be back next weekend with a brand new episode. That'll be number 372 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for the support. We got some cool stuff coming up here in the month of March, including something fun to announce next week. So until then, thanks as always. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane.
At WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you.
Drove me nuts.
You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane.
All night with this. Who talks like that? If aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? Holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.